From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. And today, we talk about faith in films, and we have our Oscar recap. We also make recommendations of fun things we're enjoying in pop culture. Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nash, Vegas. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and underwear model. Everyone loves that. And in beautiful Charlotte, the Queen City of the South, sits our panel. Frank Gaskell tells people he's a psychologist. He's also an author and the founder of the upcoming AspieCon. He's also a goat herder. And the least emotionally stable person on the entire panel, and maybe the entire planet. And most of the time, usually very happy or very upset about something. And Frank, we'll figure today is an upset day. Is that correct?
Well, today is a day of pain, because I've been in pain for many, many days now. There is one little muscle in my back that is basically a rock. And no matter how many times it gets massaged, that muscle won't relax.
Mm. So you're having
so
a lot of...
I'm just letting you know that.
You're having a lot of massages is what you're telling us.
Well, I had one and it didn't work.
Oh. So no matter how many times, one time it gets massaged.
Right. And I am just in consistent pain all the time. And last week, I took a muscle relaxer, right? Which I don't think I've ever had one. And I didn't know I took it. I thought I took a different pill. And I remember all through the day thinking, man, this is a nice day. I feel calm. I don't think I've ever felt calm like this before. And then I realized the next day that I took a muscle relaxer.
Maybe that's the secret.
That was the best. That was the best therapy he ever provided.
It really probably was my best therapy day ever.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. And also on the panel, not quite Dr. Wright is here. Emma Kate Wright. She's a doctoral intern in psychology. She loves Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, catty reality shows. What else do you love, Emma Kate? What other kind of weird stuff you like?
Well, not weird stuff. In the sense that...
this is going to be a great story.
Really
okay,
weird.
Listen, I discovered that I like fine dining.
This is a story to tell?
I'm not a rich person.
I like to breathe oxygen.
Good. No, good like air. I like to breathe
working
good
cars.
Air.
Listen, okay, I have never had a very, very nice meal until this... past weekend, I got to go eat at my brother's restaurant, which is a 2-star Michelin restaurant. And for those who don't know, there's not very many of those around, and it's in the DC area. But it was the best meal of my life, and I discovered that I wish I was rich and could eat there all the time.
You know, Dave, I discovered I like double-ply toilet paper, like
Listen.
Not just single, but double. It's twice as good.
That is a luxury. And
toilet
I'm not as rich as Frank, so, you know, I can't just eat out all the time at these fancy places because, you know, money that Frank has and I don't.
Oh, you can't turn that on me.
Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh.
All right. Well, we've learned a lot here. I think you've said it all. And Jonathan Hederle is a licensed professional counselor, a substance abuse treatment expert, and our certified Asian. He's written published book chapters on Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Walking Dead. He's also been a panelist at Heroes Con. And normally Jonathan brings us psychology stories in the news in a segment that we call Being Human. But today we're going to kick that all to the curb and follow up with the Oscars, because we just had a ring dinger of an Oscars. So let me go around first and say, did everybody see the Oscars this year?
Yes.
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 All righty. So just kind of round robin, general take on the Oscar telecast this year. We're going to get to all the big flub and all that kind of stuff, but your general take on the telecast.
I really enjoyed the opening with Justin Timberlake. I thought he brought a lot of really fun energy to the beginning of the show. And I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty nice job overall. I thought it was a solid hosting. And some of the things kind of fell flat given, like, I did not like the tour bus thing. I thought that was awkward. I had secondhand embarrassment for the stars and for the people that had no idea they were going to meet all these A-list people. So, but overall, I really enjoyed it for the most part.
Jonathan.
I thought it was fine. There were some good things and there were some things that I thought kind of fell flat. I think Jimmy Kimmel, he did fine. I think actually towards the end, we can talk about, I think you know, he did about as well as you could in the midst of kind of that surprise ending. But overall, the things I didn't like about the show, they weren't him. Although I would say the bus thing really fell flat. And I like Justin Timberlake, but it felt really long to start the show. And the show just went on and on and on.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, it's fine. It's nice. I'm always wanting that host that will just knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. The Tina Fey or somebody that's just going to rock it. And I don't know when we'll ever get that again.
Well, I think we're all liking it, but I have a different take on it. I actually, and maybe I'll think better of this in a few weeks or a month, but I really think it was the best Oscar telecast that I've ever seen. I think it was the best Oscar telecast in my lifetime.
Did you take a muscle relaxer?
Why?
No, I really did.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I thought on every level. First of all, some of the stuff that you guys thought fell flat, like the bus thing, I thought it wasn't like stellar, but I actually liked it. But I like that kind of humor. I like that sort of spontaneous.
You like bus humor?
Yeah, I like bus humor a lot. But I like it where it could go or it not go. It's a risk that they're taking. It brings a little bit of a different kind of energy to the show. But I'll tell you why I like the show. First of all, as a telecast, I think it really succeeded because having Justin Timberlake, even though that's a corny song, have him lead off with it, it really loosened up the room. Usually you have a cold open with the host and everybody is stiff as a board. They're nervous. The room feels tense. This one, you had people up, they're dancing. So you could already from the beginning tell. And then Jimmy Kimmel has this way about him where he is not kind of condescending and looking down his nose, but he's also not like this fanboy. He's sort of this guy that's like your funny cousin or something that is able to appreciate it without losing perspective that it's really just an award show. And so I think
you've never met my cousins.
Yeah, maybe not. But I thought his monologue was really good. It was dead on. I thought a lot of the bits I probably would have done with one less candy drop. I think three candy drops is probably one too many. But
I could have done with four less candy drops.
I like the candy drop. That was fun.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. And I thought the audience felt looser. He felt very comfortable and he was funny. But then there were just a lot of things about the telecast that were really cool. Like I think it was very of the moment where they talked about stuff that's going on politically without it feeling overbearing. They talked about stuff that's going on culturally in a way that didn't feel like it's a bunch of celebrities saying self-important things. And
yeah, I agree with that.
Then a lot of really important things happen in the show. I mean, if you think about the first Muslim actor ever to win an Oscar, Viola Davis became the first African-American woman to win an Oscar, Emmy, and Tony for her acting. Moonlight was the first LGBTQ themed movie to win Best Picture. The OJ movie won. There was a lot of cool stuff that I think will hold up and significant. So yeah, I was all about it. And then I think the ending was so bonkers, so crazy that to me it just sort of was like the weird little bonkers cherry on top of the whole thing. So I think it's going to be one of the most memorable Oscars ever, personally. To me, it didn't drag on.
Me too, Dave. I completely agree. Yeah. Abs with you.
Oh, speaking of that, page. Thanks for chiming in there, Frank. I believe you owe me $20. Thanks for reminding me.
I believe I do.
Yeah. So speaking of that, how did everybody do with their predictions? Frank, we know, did not do well. But Jonathan, how about
that
you?
That would be true.
I got all my predictions right except Best Picture. But Casey did end up pulling it out and beating Denzel, which I believe you were pulling for Denzel. But I did not see Moonlight winning. I think it's fantastic and I'm very happy for it, and it's a very deserving movie. But I will say, Dave, talking about this award show, the one thing that I think is gonna, in addition to the ending, stand up is the fact that I'd be hard-pressed not to say the best performances in movies won the actual awards, which every year you get some left field winners that just seem incredibly political or lifetime achievement like. The best performances, the best movies actually won this year. And so to me, that's what I'm going to remember from this broadcast.
I meant to say that also, that it felt like people were paying attention to the films and really judging on the film. So you have Hacksaw Ridge that won, and there wasn't a lot of politics around that. There were movies that were maybe not the favorite, like the La La Land sweep, but they were really looking hard at the movies and awarding based on performance, based on the job that someone did. So I think that's one of the strengths of this too. How about you, Emma Kate?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys in that, because I remember when Leonardo DiCaprio won for The Revenant, I was like, man, like that really, it was a great performance, but was it really his best? I don't know. It was kind of like, all right, he's been nominated a lot, here you go. That's how I felt about that. So I'm with you on actually having the votes go towards performances that deserved it.
Yeah, I will tell you, my guy pulled it out. The best sound mixing.
Kevin O'Connell?
Yeah, he finally won one. I was so proud of him.
That was really cool, too. Yeah. I mean, and his speech that he gave talking about his mom, I think was really, that was a tender, very tender.
Yeah. I also enjoyed the Iranian director that did not come, but it was a really well-written speech that was read for him.
I enjoyed all of the celebrities that didn't come. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I loved the look on Warren Beatty's face at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh.
Well, you know, like it's one of those things that people are going to play it back like the Zapruder film like a million times and look at everything. He clearly was given the wrong envelope. They've already kind of said that it wasn't his fault. But man, that was, you think about all the stuff that had to go wrong for that to go wrong, right? So first it had to be, he was given the wrong envelope, which has only one other time happened as far as we know. Second, it had to be include a name of a movie that also was nominated for Best Picture, which, you know, there's a lot of overlap, but that could have happened. But then it had to be the film that everybody kind of knew was going to win and that no one would think twice about. And for all that to happen, I mean, it was a crazy set of events. It was bonkers.
That'd be hilarious if it had been like a movie that wasn't even nominated. And Zootopia wins Best Picture.
But I'll tell you that the guy that was in charge of that card, he's a partner with Price Waterhouse and had asked permission if he could tweet from the Oscars. And the Oscars said he could until he left the red carpet, because they only wanted him focused on this one job, and he was told to not tweet.
One job.
And the tweet that he sent out was right when that envelope was switched.
Yep.
So that guy's an idiot.
It's truly, you've only got one job. I mean, like, that's the definition of you've only got one job.
Just one job.
He's like he's going to be the Bill Buckner of like Oscar telecasts. Yep. Like,
I'd hate to be him in his office right now.
But what I will say is, if they're going to do a mistake, it was better that La La Land went up and then they called Moonlight than if Moonlight had gone up. And they'd be like, no, wait a minute. The Fluffy White Musical won over. I mean, that would have been horrible.
That would have sucked.
Really bad.
Horrible.
I know. Man, and I'll also say part of what made the telecast for me is you think about, your nerves are through the roof, your expectations, then you get called, you're up there, you're giving your thank yous, and then that guy, is it Justin Hurwitz, he has to have the presence of mind to understand what's happening and then have the grace to say the stuff that he did. I mean, that was really like, that was a case study in grace under pressure. I thought he was a bit of a hero in that whole thing, the way he handled it.
And he snapped that card right out of Warren Beatty's hand.
Sure did. Like, he was like, give me this.
There's been a spike, Moonlight.
Well, it's been interesting because I've had a number of conversations and to see how people, like how they process that last scene. Because on the one hand, you have La La Land, which was humiliated. And then they show kind of grace in the face of public humiliation. And then you have Moonlight, which really they were robbed of their moment in the spotlight, and they handled that just as graciously. But it's interesting to hear people talk about who they feel bad or worse for in that situation. I'm like, okay, so is it humiliation or missing your moment in the spotlight that really gets under you more?
I feel bad for both of them, to be honest. I mean, because think about it, the culmination is that award of the show. And everyone, you know, you work your whole career to try and aspire to something like that, and then poof, it's gone. And yet at the same time, they had already gone through their speeches and were like, oh, and thank you so and so, and I'm so happy about this. And yeah, it was terrible for both.
How about Steve Harvey? Oh, yeah. I saw a meme where it just shows that, and then it's him just saying, thank you.
Yeah. That was, again, Jimmy Kimmel's so funny because in the moment, he's just rolling with it. He's like, I blame Steve Harvey. Like, how would you come up with that line in the moment?
I know. That's amazing. Good stuff.
Yeah, to me, I think this is an all-timer. I think the telecast was well-paced. I think some significant things happen. And then that bonkers ending, I think it's going to be something that we're going to talk about for a while. I have a different take on it. I might be wrong, but I think rather than detracting from Moonlight, I think it only magnifies the attention to Moonlight, which is only a good thing. I think you guys know I didn't predict it to win, but I did think it was the best picture. I'm glad it won. I think it should have won, but very good stuff. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's our trending topic, and this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Hey, this is Dave Verhagen, one of the hosts of Shrink Tank and also author of the new book, Liberia's Son. Liberia's Son tells the true story of UJ Harris, who, as a child, was caught in the crossfire of an unexpected, brutal civil war in West Africa. When I met UJ and learned his story, I knew I had to write this book. I knew I wanted his story to be told. It's a great story of hope, courage, and resilience. It's available at HeroHousePublishing.com and Amazon.com. I hope you'll consider picking it up. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen along with Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell. And our trending topic today is faith in films. And the movie The Shack is coming out. And briefly, if you don't know about this, it was based on a book that really depicts this grieving man who meets with God. God takes different forms of human, and it's in this place called The Shack. And so we'll talk a little bit, not so much about that movie, but about faith in films. But for you guys, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, can you think of a movie that you felt like was a really good depiction of faith, of any type of faith, in a movie? Anything come to your mind?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is one of all of our favorite films is M. Night Shyamalan's movie about the aliens.
Signs.
Wow. Oh boy.
To have enough faith to take that baseball bat and swing away.
Yeah.
Why is Frank on our podcast?
I'm not sure.
why that's, maybe we need to have a whole podcast on that topic. Jonathan?
You know, I'm kind of blanking. I'm sorry. But yeah, I'm actually kind of blanking. I feel like no matter what gets depicted with faith-based stuff and films, it just gets critiqued and ripped apart. You know, there's always something wrong with it. Oh, it's not biblical because there's, you know, these different, I guess, sects of Christianity where someone's not going to agree with it. So I guess that's kind of a loaded question, I feel like.
Well, I mean, as somebody who grew up going to Sunday school and church, and I actually even went to college and studied theology.
Shocker.
Shocker. I really love films that deal with faith and values and morals, but I don't need it to be a Sunday morning worship service. Like, I don't need propaganda. I need something that really you can get to where it challenges it or digs deeper, something along the lines of, like, you know, there's actually a Polish filmmaker named Krzysztof Kieślowski, and he did something called The Decalogue, which was a 10-part series where each one of them's on the Ten Commandments. But there's very little about God. It's really setting up these stories where that commandment is being challenged, or like real-life situations that there's not a clear right or wrong, and how do people kind of, you know, live out morals and values in the face of not a clear-cut answer. And those are the types of movies that I really, really enjoy. But one that really deals explicitly with faith, like Chariots of Fire, I thought was a good movie. And just in terms of somebody getting so high up, like being able to run and win Olympic gold, but his belief in not being able to run on the Sabbath. You know, somebody's convictions, you know, coming up, facing challenges with kind of real life circumstances. So that's one that came to mind.
I will tell you, I do have one, which I think is the most faith-based type film, which is Field of Dreams. That movie was amazing. And I mean, you hear build it and they will come. I mean, really? It's sort of, I'm going to do this purely out of faith.
Mm-hmm. And there were a number of movies this year, including some that were Oscar nominated, that really highlighted faith in a central way. Silence, Martin Scorsese's movie. Hacksaw Ridge, faith was really at the heart of that movie. Hidden Figures, it wasn't really a movie about faith, but it certainly that was a big component of these women's lives and what sort of motivated and organized them. So there are films that do depict faith in really positive ways. But Jonathan used the word propaganda. So like there are movies that just seem like they're really, to use the term, propaganda. The point of the movie is to push a sort of, you know, this is a faith that we are promoting in a way that's more about that message than it is about the quality of the storytelling and the movie itself. So how do you kind of separate that out? Like what makes something propaganda and then what makes something a good integration of faith in film?
Well, I mean, just off the top of my head, a spiritual film that is not propaganda, it will upset everybody. Like, you know, everybody will come away disappointed because they can't claim that it really promotes their one specific way of looking at the world and belief and morals and values. But I mean, I think it's really about when the characters and the stories are humanized. And one of the biggest, you know, kind of for me, when it comes specifically to faith-based films, the biggest tag for something being propaganda is that there's always a happy ending. You know, something that leaves you some ways not with all the answers and challenges you, to me, that's really, I think, one of the intrinsic values the needs of art to do. Art is designed to kind of stimulate our thought and make us question and challenge things. To where if it just gives you the answers, it just tells you what to think, what to feel, what to believe, to me, that starts to veer more towards propaganda and manipulation.
Yeah. And, you know, in the faith community, what you'll hear is a movie's good if it has a redemptive story. Like that's the kind of the line. But to be honest, some of the stories that highlight faith the best or really make you wrestle with questions of spirituality and faith are ones that might go sideways or might not have a good ending. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they're not truly redemptive in the sense that they're meaning that. So that may be part of it too. Also feels like some of it's just the quality of the storytelling, right? I think about The Lord of the Rings. That, you know, Tolkien was a person of faith, and Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit really is a allegory in some ways, not maybe as on the nose as C.S. Lewis's work, but it's definitely in there. But the quality of the storytelling is just so great, and it has all those themes embedded in there of, you know, kind of savior themes and you know, redemption themes and all that kind of stuff. Any other thoughts about it?
Well, Dave, I'm a scholar of many of our topics, and related to Lord of the Rings, the Star Wars franchise is very faith-based as well. And in 2001, hundreds of thousands of people across the world cited the Jedi as their religion. And in New Zealand, it was the second largest religion. I didn't know if you knew that.
Why is Frank on our podcast?
The Force is you have to have faith to let go and believe in the Force. And Yoda was the man that communicated this.
So Yoda was God?
No, he was someone spreading the good news of the Force.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
A Force apostle.
Well, thanks, Frank, for all that. You're very helpful with the podcast. You add a lot.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
So psychology in particular gets a rap for being sometimes anti-faith, which I think is not fair. But the question I have is sort of with faith and emotional well-being. And we know that faith can have, we just know this from research and from living life, that faith can have a very positive effect on people. It also can, there are negative aspects of faith in particular ways. So how do you kind of tease all that stuff out, not just in film, but just in life, like the role of faith toward emotional health, emotional well-being, what's healthy, what's not?
Well, I mean, whenever you can find a sense of community within a church to help support you, that's a very positive and powerful thing.
Or a synagogue.
Or a mosque.
Or a Jedi temple.
Or the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Whatever, you know, religion you are following, that is a protective factor when we are working with individuals and trying to figure out, okay, what supports do they have? How can we help them? That's definitely one of the big ones. But at the same time, though, I do think there is kind of a line where if you are in a very strict orthodox form of a specific religion, any religion, it can cause a lot of stress and it makes it harder where, oh man, I'm not living up to this expectation. And so maybe feel shame. And so there's kind of a balance between it being supportive and helpful versus potentially harmful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by the psychology of religion and why certain people in certain traits seem to kind of gravitate towards a particular belief system. Having worked with the substance abuse and addiction community, there's a great emphasis on a higher power or a power greater than themselves. And that's something that even if somebody really has some negative experience or beliefs around organized religion, the concept of finding meaning and purpose in life in some things that are not tangible, like, you know, are more nebulous. Because, you know, everybody, I think, needs a sense of purpose and meaning in their life to really feel like what they do and who they are makes a difference. And to have a moral code, to have some framework of what's right and wrong, what's good and bad, will help people to find some satisfaction and joy in life.
Which, Dave, this is serious, is exemplified in the movie Rogue One by the guy. Who's the guy that we like?
Chirrut.
Yeah. I am one with the Force and the Force is one with me. I mean, it's a total mantra of being centered. And I mean, that's what Star Wars is. Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing.
Star Wars is basically, you know, George Lucas, a white man, stealing all this Asian philosophy and spirituality of Buddhism. Yes,
yeah,
you're right.
That's true.
Yeah.
Accurate.
Well, this is a big topic, and we could return to it. It'll be interesting to hear how it is with The Shack, if this is a movie that really is a good depiction of faith, if it's a good movie. I have my doubts, but we will see. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's our doctor's orders. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hi, this is Dave Verhagen. We're glad you listened to the Shrink Tank Podcast. And if you have room for one more podcast in your life, please check out Blew My Mind. Dr. Craig Pohlman and his panel talk about things in pop culture that blew their minds. It might be a love song, a movie twist, a television finale. It's something that blew their minds. You can hear it on shrinktank.com or download it through iTunes. It's Blew My Mind. Check it out.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen, Frank Gaskell, Emma Kate Wright, and Jonathan Hederle, and we wrap it all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Emma Kate, what do you have for us?
I'm so excited about a new musician that I discovered via the Grammys. His name is Anderson .Paak, P-A-A-K, and I just have been obsessed with his album Malibu. There's some really great songs on there, super fun. Have, for those who are familiar with Jamiroquai, Virtual Insanity, kind of a similar feel to that, very upbeat. So definitely check it out.
Jonathan?
Two things. One is The Oscar-winning documentary short, The White Helmets, is now available to view on Netflix. I highly recommend that. It's really about people that search for survivors in wreckage from bombs, and it's a true life story. It's very inspiring. Highly recommend that. And recently on a road trip up to Chapel Hill, we needed something funny to listen to, so I revisited one of my favorite comedians. I just want to give a shout-out. John Mulaney is a comedian. He wrote a lot for SNL and the character Stefan with Bill Hader. His comedy special, The Comeback Kid, is one of the funniest things I've heard in recent years, and I highly recommend it.
It was hilarious.
And you can find it on Netflix as well.
All right, Frank?
Per usual, I'm making a recommendation that probably everybody already knows about. But I have discovered the Netflix series American Horror Story. And I saw the pilot and am obsessed with this. It is a freak show, scary, scary TV series, and I'm loving it.
All right. My recommendation is a graphic novel, a comic book series, Black Panther. And it was written by the guy who wrote the National Book Award winning book. It's Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's written this graphic novel based on Black Panther that I believe the movie is going to draw from. I'm not sure it's going to be exactly the same story, but it's going to draw a lot from it. But it's really, really good. And volumes 1 and 2 are out, and I highly recommend it, especially if you're into graphic novel stuff. But I'm feeling super good about this Black Panther film that is queuing up. The cast is just outrageous. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles, videos, and polls about movies, TV, music, books, games, sports, trends, a whole lot more. Make sure to check out shrinktank.com. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank podcast. And our producer is the lovely Sean Beck, who also composed our lovely theme music in the Queen City. It's Jonathan Hederle, Emma Kate Wright, and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Tell all your friends and make it a good week. Shrink Tank.